welcome to the Ian Ellis podcast, the Ian Ellis experience. Get excited. Tonight, I was really excited about my set, and I even rehearsed it. I wrote it down, which I normally don't do. And sometimes I'll record stuff and then listen to it, because that helps me like memorize and get it down in my head. And I was like, if I just go slow enough, I'll hit everything. And that shit didn't happen. It didn't work. So tonight what you got is some audio clips, and then my set, and then some audio clips, and then the pre-rehearsal to my set. Because as Grade A Plus would say, you're going to get these jokes. You're going to get these bars. Yeah, I was really excited about tonight, and it just didn't work out for me the way I wanted. But it's whatever. I still think it's hot shit. And enjoy the real shit and the fucking practice, and it'll be 6 months before I ever try this again. But I like what I did. Alright, y'all. Let's get the show started.
Welcome to the cult of Ian, you cocksucking motherfucking dog shit ass cunt bitch.
You cited freedom of speech in that. Why should your right to freedom of speech trump a trans person's right not to be offended?
Because in order to be able to think, you have to risk being offensive. I mean, look at the conversation we're having right now. You know, like, you're certainly willing to risk offending me in the pursuit of truth. Why should you have the right to do that? It's been rather uncomfortable.
Well, I'm very glad I put you on the spot.
You get my point. It's like you're doing what you should do, which is digging a bit to see what the hell's going on. So, and that is what you should do. But you're exercising your freedom of speech to certainly risk offending me. And that's fine. I think more power to you, as far as I'm concerned.
So you haven't sat there and... I'm just trying to work that out. I mean...
Ha, gotcha.
You have got me. I'm trying to work that through
time.
My head. Yeah, it took a while.
It did, yeah.
It took a while.
Considering your dharma, you should not vacillate. For a warrior, nothing is higher than a war against evil. The warrior confronted with such a war should be pleased, Arjuna. For it comes as an open gate to heaven. But if you do not participate in this battle against evil, you will incur sin, violating your dharma and your honor. The story of your dishonor will be repeated endlessly, and for a man of honor, dishonor is worse than death. These brave warriors will think you have withdrawn from battle out of fear. And those who formerly esteemed you will treat you with disrespect. Your enemies will ridicule your strength and say things that should not be said. What could be more painful than this? Death means the attainment of heaven. Victory means the enjoyment of the earth. Therefore, rise up, Arjuna, resolved to fight.
Her claims became so preposterous and so self-contradictory that it was difficult to remain completely detached. And I think, and this was the crux of the interview, and I think the part that's attracted the most attention, she had asked me at one point in a provocatively self-righteous manner just what gave me the right to assume that my privilege of free speech, let's put it that way, gave me the right to potentially offend someone and hurt their feelings.
Yeah. It's a very interesting question, which is when other religions make a rule,
right,
and expect you to follow it.
And I thought about six things at the same time. But the first thing I thought was, you're a journalist. That's the last question in the world you should ever ask someone if you have any genuine integrity as a journalist, because that's all you have as a journalist. You have the right to offend people and hurt their feelings. And so I called her out on that. I said, look, you know, all you've done in the last 20 minutes is everything you possibly could to make me as uncomfortable as you possibly can. And I said it in a way that I would say was designed to let her know that I knew exactly what she was doing. And then I suggested that that was actually okay, because she had every right to do that, but that she couldn't have it both ways.
Having made yourself alike in pain and pleasure, profit and loss, victory and defeat, engage in this great battle and you will be freed from sin.
She couldn't make her living and her reputation using those tactics, let's say. And those are, for her, those weren't tactics of seeking the truth. They were almost purely tactics of domination,
yeah,
right, and one-upmanship.
Yeah.
There are ignorant people who speak flowery words and take delight in the letter of the law, saying that there is nothing else. Their hearts are full of selfish desires, Arjuna. Their idea of heaven is their own enjoyment, and the aim of all their activities is pleasure and power. The fruit of their actions is continual rebirth. Those whose minds are swept away by the pursuit of pleasure and power are incapable of following the supreme goal and will not attain samadhi.
And maybe, you know, if you live in the postmodernist world, you don't believe in truth anyways. There's just victory and power games. And so perhaps that's what she was pursuing. I don't know exactly what she was pursuing, but it was so palpably obvious to the two of us at that point that she had, in fact, done nothing except try to make me uncomfortable,
yeah,
that calling her on it left her speechless. And then that was the only time, I would say, when I actually spoke to the genuine human being instead of the ideological front.
Ideological front.
You can't take offensiveness out of the human experience.
I don't think so.
And so that's what's tricky about it.
None of what's happening in this polarized atmosphere is amusing to me.
We can learn to go against these conditioned ways of thinking and actually change ourselves from the inside out. This is a strenuous, painful, difficult challenge. The very meaning of the word conditioning is that the connections between thought and action have become automatic, out of our control. In this sense, the whole purpose of meditation is to extend the conscious will deep into the unconscious mind. The underlying principle of this can be stated simply: we become what we meditate on.
Make people immune to ideological possession. That was the goal. Yeah. Most of what passes for morality is just obedient cowardice.
Yeah.
So I'm an obedient coward. Well, no one wants to think that. So they say, well, no, I'm not an obedient coward. I'm a good person because I don't break any rules. It's like, no, you're not. You're an obedient coward and you're too afraid to break the rules. That doesn't make you good.
It is interesting how much we expect other people to follow our rules.
You're not moral if you're just harmless. And the question is, well, what's the antidote to being harmless? And that's the antidote to that is to open up that doorway into the shadow.
We're going after things, whether they're ideas or people or things that we are kind of annoyed by.
Yes.
And we can't be loyal to anyone or anything.
And then you could become that, right? There's that gleeful, predatory victory that's part of that. You know, that would be associated with, let's say, the attitude that I could have had to what happened with Channel 4. It's like, I won.
Yeah.
Look the fuck out. Right. But no, that's not right, because it's not good enough. It's better than losing by a lot, because there's nothing in a loss that's admirable. But it's not the highest form of victory, and there's no reason not to go for the highest form of victory, and that's peace.
When someone is rude to you, just try being kind in return. Angry words will pile up behind your clenched teeth. But every time you succeed, you have dug your new samskara a little deeper. When they run deep enough, prana will flow naturally down these new channels instead of down the old. major part of your character, consciousness, and conduct will be transformed.
Yeah. Right. It's not predatory victory. It's peace. Because anyone with any sense, who has any wisdom, regards peace as the goal. And that isn't the peace that means that I'm so afraid of you that I'm not going to say anything. It's the peace that is that, like, it's the peace of armed opponents who respect one another. Right, that's real peace. Act this out, let's say. You're not living, you're fragmented. You're a puppet. You're a puppet of other motivational forces. Like, this is what happens when you unite the motivational forces that guide you. Unite your own nature with your own culture and rise up above it. That's what happens as you end up acting this out in one way or another. And you might as well know it. And this was Jung's point. It's like, you can be the unconscious actor of a malevolent, tragic drama. Or you can wake the hell up and you can decide that you're going to be the hero of not only your story, but of everyone's story. And then you can choose. Which of those do you want? Now, the problem with choosing, let's call it the archetypally heroic path, is that you have to take the responsibility. But the upside is, well, what the hell's the difference between responsibility and opportunity? You could say, well, there's no difference between responsibility and opportunity, so the more responsibility you take, the more opportunity you have. Now, maybe you don't want that because you'd rather cower in the corner and hide. But the thing is that you probably wouldn't rather do that, because if you try it, you'll find that there's nothing in it but self-contempt and misery. Right? That's a bad pathway to pull back and to fail to engage in the world, and to you end up bitter and resentful and self-destructive and vengeful and then far worse. That's you can develop a liking for that. I wouldn't recommend it.
J.R. Castro, ladies and gentlemen, keep your hands going and clapping. Also, give it up for Katie, our bar manager, who is apparently delivering shots on stage. She's a bar manager. We love her. She's very responsible. Okay. Your next comedian coming up here is a very funny guy. He's the guy that sounds like he's been vomiting back there all night, but he's actually super funny. Give it up for Ian Ellis. World's fucked up. Terrorism. School shootings. Kardashians got renewed again. It's a mess. We're lacking in discernment. So to help out the world tonight, I'm going to talk about horsies. To help you get your life together. In the Bhagavad Gita, we're introduced to two people. Arjuna, who is us, and Krishna, who is God. He's also a charioteer. Means he's in charge of the horsies. He is trying to teach Arjuna how to have control over his mind. And his mind is like horsies. When they run wild, he runs wild. But when he has a charioteer, they're in control. When you think like that, you realize, maybe I don't have a drinking problem, maybe I have a horsey problem. And you start to have control over your thoughts. It's important to have boundaries with your thoughts, but it's hard because there are billion-dollar industries that are designed to fuck with your boundaries. Industries that are designed to make you afraid, so you buy shit, like the news. Industries that are designed to make you feel inferior, so you buy shit, like TV, and movies, and Instagram, and Facebook, and any other shit that makes you feel less than. Industries that are designed to make you obey, because somebody's got to make the shit that we're trying to sell to people. Is it not funny? Fuck. Where did I mess up? You guys really hate Hindu people. Trying to give you the game so you can be enlightened and y'all fronting and shit. We gotta have control over our thoughts. which means we have to have a charioteer. And if you're a Buddhist, you say to your negative thoughts, thank you for helping me with my karma. May you have peace on your journey. Or if you're like me, you say to your negative thoughts, fuck you, you fat cunt! Because in AA, they say, if you don't have a deity, it's okay to just make one up. Mine is a Scotsman. Jog on, you twat! So I deal with negative thoughts. Recently, my charioteer went Super Saiyan. One of the things I struggle with is smoking. I don't smoke all the time. When I don't have a cigarette, I start to feel anxious. My blood flows, and I lose patience, and I hate everything. And then my charioteer said to me, that pain that you're feeling, it's not pain inflicted on you. It's pain that you're inflicting on your addiction. And I'm happy to let that cunt suffer. God damn it. Because when I catch a wild horse, I don't just break it in, I send it to Glue Factory. I'm going to end on this. Usually when I end a set, I say to the audience, my name's Ian Ellis, I love you, good night. And that's to show appreciation to the audience, because you guys mean a lot to me. Once upon a time, I was married to another woman. And that relationship ended when I found out she was cheating on me. And I dealt with that situation by beating that bitch's ass. I'm not proud of that situation, because after that, I didn't just lose my wife, I lost myself. I wasn't the man I thought I was. I was a piece of shit. And I decided I was going to commit suicide. Now, I've had friends commit suicide, and I always think, why not do something crazy first? Like rob a bank, and put that money in a locker, and send that locker key to me at P.O. Box 1373, so one of us doesn't have to die broke. I tried doing that, but it turns out, when you're suicidal and drunk, people don't want to sell you a gun. So instead, I tried stand-up comedy for the first time. And when I was at my lowest point, when I didn't know who I was, the audience lifted me up. And they made me feel like I had some value. And they made me feel like, even though I'm a piece of shit, it's okay if I do some good. And so I wanted to show them some appreciation. So I said to them, and I say to you, my name's Ian Ellis. I love you. Good night.
Ian Ellis, ladies and gentlemen. Give it up for him.
The finite rests upon the infinite, and the infinite is God. Now listen to the principles of yoga. By practicing these, you can break through the bonds of karma. On this path, effort never goes to waste, and there is no failure. Even a little effort towards spiritual awareness will protect you from the greatest fear. Those who follow this path, resolving deep within themselves to seek me alone, attain singleness of purpose. For those who lack resolution, the decisions of life are many-branched and endless. The words mean simply to cast aside external props and dependencies and rely on the self alone, seeking strength nowhere but within. Why does selfless action lead to self-realization? It is not a matter of good action being divinely rewarded. Self-realization is not some kind of compensation for good deeds. We can understand the dynamics if we remember that the Gita's emphasis is on the mind. Most human activity, good and bad, is tainted by ego involvement. Such activity cannot purify consciousness because it goes on generating new karma in the mind. In practical terms, we go on getting entangled in what we do. Selfless work purifies consciousness, because when there is no trace of ego involvement, new karma is not produced. The mind is simply working out the karma it has already accumulated. Even the nervous system seems to be reconditioned by this transformation. Where a destructive samskara like anger releases toxins and lowers resistance, a positive samskara like patience, forgiveness, or compassion protects and heals. Patience, for example, is the best health insurance I know.
Patience is a dynamic quality. I'm not talking about repression. A patient person is not usually subject to high blood pressure for the simple reason that he or she does not feel under stress. A patient mind is a calm mind, secure, unthreatened by life. Consequently, the immune system and the rest of the body become as strong as genetic limits will allow. It is interesting to observe that the very substances that produce the symptoms of allergy, such as histamine and bradykinin, are also released in an attack of anger. The person who gets angry easily, or for that matter annoyed, frustrated, jealous, or upset, is often hypersensitive. Something perceived as provocative produces not only an emotional response in the mind, but physiological reactions in the body. In the case of allergy too, the perception of an irritant can trigger an attack, even if the irritant itself is absent. But if the mind has linked the allergic reaction with a particular emotional response, the emotional stimulus alone can provoke an attack. This is really just the insecurity of body identification again, and people try to deal with it in very different ways. An aggressive person, for example, may try to compensate by seeking to dominate the world outside him, manipulating events and people to gain control over a sphere of security where he will not feel threatened. Many people we do not think of as insecure fit this category, including those driven by an aggressive need to compete and to dominate. Individuals like this often show a compulsive need to fit more and more activities into less and less time, often for no reason except to do more. I would trace this to a root insecurity, for which an aggressive personality tries to compensate by dominating the world outside him. Such a person has very little awareness of an inner self, and even less sensitivity to the needs of those around him. When this kind of behavior becomes extreme, little things can assume monstrous proportions. Anger is the typical outcome, and nothing is too trifling to provoke it. For such a person, everything is a personal challenge throughout the day. The result is one of the most highly disease-prone characteristics I can think of. A free-floating hostility that is ready to erupt in violent words or even actions over virtually anything at all. I see hurry and hostility everywhere today, and it is ominous for the whole society. I have seen one motorist in San Francisco get out of his car and attack another for honking at him when the traffic light turned green. And it is not uncommon to read in the papers that someone has been shot or forced into an accident on the highway because someone else did not like the way he was driving. So-called meaningless violence is frequent in our cities and even in our schools. A child may be shot because of the kind of shoes she wears or the color of his jacket. Maya Friedman, the cardiologist who coined the term type A, considered this kind of behavior as closely linked with heart disease statistically as high cholesterol is. Whatever problems Gross might have with high-fat diets, I would say that Subtle has a fat problem too. If Gross is what he eats, Subtle is what she thinks. And just as there are junk foods and nutritious foods, there are junk food and healthful states of mind. My friend Laurel is always singing the praises of homemade whole grain bread. Patience is like a slice of Laurel's bread. It nourishes the mind in at least a dozen ways. Impatience, anger, hostility, and resentment, on the other hand, are like those roasted nuts I used to find in department stores. Salty, stale, and predisposing to high blood pressure if indulged in excessively. And a sweet, gooey piece of self-will. Doing something you want just because you want to, the way you want to, when you want to, although it benefits nobody, including yourself, is like a big slice of cheesecake. There is nothing like cheesecake for putting on pounds, and nothing like indulging self-will for making the ego obese. Extra pounds are not put on the body with two or three huge meals. We grow fat through nibbling, little of this, little of that, 25 times a day. Subtle snacks too. A bit of resentment after breakfast, some hostility for high tea, a handful of anxious attitudes before bed. She even indulges in midnight snacks, as most of us can attest when we recall our dreams. Thoughts may not supply calories, but when we go on thinking about ourselves like this day and night, I want this, I don't like that, that's not fair, life's not being nice to me, By the end of a year, the ego will have put on enough pounds to warrant a place in Ripley's Believe It or Not. An overweight ego is touchy, acutely sensitive to little things. It becomes rigid, takes everything personally, and is offended as easily as it gets inflated. All of which make it extremely vulnerable to what life hands out, and prone to anger when it feels its demands are not met. When Gross is overweight, he finds it stressful even to climb a flight of stairs. Subtle, too, when she gets bloated by negative states of mind, makes stress of even little things, simply because she views them as big and takes them personally.
Can women be funny?
Yeah, of course.
Some people have a hard time saying yes, though. There are a lot of angry young men on the internet that are like, women can't be fun.
Will you guys just fucking grow up and just sit down and write your own horse shit and come up with it? Start your own fucking show. Have your own award show. Quit waiting around for other people to do shit for you. That's the fucking problem. If you guys had your own big club and I was standing outside of it, you'd never fucking let me in. I'd start my own shit. You guys got to start your own shit. You got brains in there, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So write your own shit and quit your fucking whining. We're all eating a giant shit sandwich out here. Nobody cares. I don't care.
Absolutely, but I'm an entrepreneur. I'm a white person.
The fuck up. It makes no difference whether you got a dick or a twat. All right? Just do what the fuck you want to do, and hopefully people respond to it. But this fucking horseshit of quotas and all of this crap, become undeniable. Well, when was the last time you went on stage and you killed so hard the person after you bombed? If you're fucking doing that on a regular basis, people are going to notice regardless of what you have between your legs. Yep. All right? Thank you, and God bless the United States of Canada.
The world is a terrible place. Murders, killings, hatred, racism, evil. And we're in need for discernment. So tonight, what I'm going to talk about is horses. In the Bhagavad Gita, we're introduced to two characters. Arjuna, who is a stand-in for man, and Krishna, who is a stand-in for God. Krishna is a charioteer. He's in charge of the horses. Which is why we have the ancient Indian proverb, Krishna take the reins. The way we think becomes the way we act. Which means sometimes we don't have a drinking problem. What we have is a horsey problem. Now if you're a Buddhist, you say to these wild thoughts, thank you for helping me with my karma. May you find peace on your journey. If you're not a Buddhist, if you're more like me, you say to these thoughts, fuck off, you miserable cunt. My charioteer is Scottish. Jog on. A charioteer is someone that helps you have boundaries with your own thoughts, which is a lot more difficult than you might think, because there are entire industries that are aimed at nothing more than manipulating those boundaries. There are industries that try to make you afraid, so you buy more shit. It's called the news. There are industries that try to make you feel inferior, so that you buy more shit. It's called advertising, and movies, and magazines, and Facebook, and every other fucking goddamn thing in the world. And there are industries that make you obedient, so that you can make that cheap shit for people to buy. Now, you can be scared, obedient, and ashamed if you want to. You can live your life that way, if that's what you choose. Or you could be like me, and you could say to those thoughts, fuck off, you miserable cunt. And then you whip your reins and you ride off laughing. Ha ha, ha ha, ha ha, ha. I'll tell you a trick that I recently learned to help me deal with one of my problems. I'm a smoker. I hate smoking cigarettes. It was very difficult to quit. Often when I go long periods without them, I start feeling pain. I start feeling unbelievable cravings. And I realize that pain isn't pain that I'm feeling. It's pain that my addiction is feeling. And now, I'm happy to let that addiction suffer for as long as it would like, until it's willing to leave. See, I don't deal with wild horses. I send them to the glue factory. Ha 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 ha.
If it ain't Jesus, y'all ain't trying to hear it. I'm Krishna, bitch! Yeah! Yeah!